Some of it you gon' like, some of it you ain't. Tired of hearing fools complaining in barber chairs and beauty shops.
That is Truth Brothers Radio.
That's more like it.
If you're not listening to the Truth Brothers, the truth is in you. Truth Brothers Radio. Hello, everybody. Happy Monday. We're here to do it again. It's time for Truth Brothers. I'm Ray.
And I'm Devon.
And we are the Truth Brothers. The number to give us a call is 818-514-1202. That's 818-514-1202.
And as always, you guys know you can hit us up in our email at wewanttruth@att.net, and truth is spelled T-R-U-F.
And we got the chat room live and buzzing, and we're on, man. How was your weekend?
Oh, man, I had a ball, man. I actually, a busy weekend. Saw the fight, saw some movies, and, enjoyed myself. Yourself?
Yeah, same with me, man. I saw the fight. Nice fight. School was in session.
Yeah, Floyd earned his money.
Yeah, Floyd learned him up something rather nice, man. I got to give it to him.
He got paid.
Except for that one judge.
Oh, yeah, it's even.
Yeah, she had blurred lines. She couldn't see nothing.
See, I guess she wasn't the hottest in the past. but that fight, yeah, shouts out to Floyd Money Mayweather, man. Arguably, in my opinion, the best to ever do it. I'm pound for pound the best to ever do it, man. That boy's in his 40s, and he boxes like he just got out the schoolyard.
Yeah, I was rather impressed, man, and he did a... He did a good job, man. I mean, you got to really take your hats off to him, don't you?
Drive down the street with two expired tags down a white neighborhood.
Huh? Okay.
But anyway.
All right. Yeah. Who?
So what
you like that? You like the Bears win?
Bears win was, of course, was great, you know.
No
nail
like biter.
Yeah. Like that last minute Bennett, but, you know.
Yeah.
Cool. I like that.
Yeah, nail biter, 2-0. That's nice. You know what? It was weird because, you know, after they had scored the second touchdown, I had called you and was like, man, they looking good. And then it kind of got shaky after I hung up from you.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's when Cutler fumbled and it – gave up six.
A couple of things on that, though, man, real quick. Like, I don't blame the fumble. I know it's
no, Jared Allen is a bad dude, man. Yeah.
Kickoff, I can't really be mad at.
So no.
14 points.
No.
Like, but, you know, that interception in the end zone, that's your fault.
Yeah. He wish he had. I'm sure he wish he had that pass back.
Other
in it.
Than that, you know, hey.
You've seen him 2 weeks in a row, fourth quarter comeback. That's nice to see.
Yes. And I'm happy. So there you go.
There you go. Who we hollering at?
All right. We got a first off, man, condolences out to everybody who lost people in the Navy shootings over there in Washington, D.C., man.
Yes.
Just peep that craziness. Got to say what's up to Renee Day, Denicia Booth, Jose Del Rio. Congrats to Rhonda A. Lee on having her baby boy, Louis.
Yeah.
Johnson.
Right. Right after she dealt with us.
Yep. She had the baby for 5 pounds, 10 ounces, 18 inches long. And the baby, not
Rhonda. Yeah. There you go. There she go.
Yeah,
she's on top of.
She named him Louis Charles Johnson. Wow. And, of course, keep your head up to my boy Heavy, man, going through something right now. So keep your head up, bro. I know you're listening. DJ's B-Days. We got a list, people, so bear with me. Danny Youngers, Ronald E. Childs, I'm sorry, Jared Q. Smith, Condria Williams, did that right, Yvonne Baker from Hot Topic, happy birthday, Jackie Cash, Laquanda Everett, Kirk Daniels, Rose Gold. That's their real name. Rose Gold. That's cool. Shelly Monique, Michael Seneff, Kelly Dabney, John Scales, Jamise Webb, LaTanya Gray. And on a personal note, happy birthday to my boy Kyrie Wills. What's happening, bro? Happy birthday to you. Kayla Killingsworth, my little, I guess, yeah, you know, little family over there. And to my dad, who will be celebrating his birthday tomorrow. Pops, know you listening, man. Happy birthday. And no, you don't have any fans yet. I don't know when they're going to. He wants fans.
He wants fans. You know what? My dad asked the same thing, man. Like, yeah.
Where are my fans at? And I'm like, he wants to send out autographs and all that. And I was like, nah, you gotta put in years before you get that. So, yeah, man. But other than that, yeah, that's DJ's B-Days. And again, happy birthday to all y'all. And we love you here at Truth Brothers Radio.
All right. Very nice. Very nice. Are you ready?
Yeah, strap it on. That's my joint, man. Strap it on. It's that time.
It's the terrible truth.
This is the terrible truth. With your terrible anchors, Ray and the Bomb.
Greetings and salutations. This is Kent Clark of the Terrible Truth. This portion of the Terrible Truth is brought to you by the new fish show about men who use different objects to reel in fish. It's called Masturbators.
All right.
There you go.
All right. And Jason Collins reversible condoms.
There you go.
Use one side, reverse it, then let your friend get in.
Your boy. Your boyfriend. Get in. Oh, man.
Ah. They're not for good girls.
They for dirty boys. Speaking of dirty boys, porn star breaks manhood, seeks donations for medical bills.
Yeah. What a dumbass.
You can't make this kind of stuff up. A porn star has broken his penis for the second time and is seeking donations to pay his three, I'm sorry, I almost missed a comma there. $32,000 in medical bills. Porn actor. I don't know this dude. And I you know, whatever. Porn actor Prince
Prince Yan.
Whatever.
Yeah.
First broke his moneymaker 3 years ago during a shoot.
Doing the dreaded stunt.
Yep. Doing the Jason Collins. A couple of weeks ago, the injury was aggravated enough for him to require medical attention. At the hospital, it was discovered that he actually broken his penis for the second time. We're going to just call him Prince Y. Found out it would cost $32,000 for the surgery to repair his Johnson and for rehabilitation. How do you rehabilitate a broken penis? Isn't that called jerking off?
I don't know.
I don't know,
but I guess he can't shoot straight.
Yeah. I'm looking at the man girl he's with, too. But anyway, the dude Prince Y reps have started a fundraising campaign on giveforward.com to
pay it forward.
To help raise the $32,000 for the actor's medical expenses. Prince released a statement on AVN.com, quote, blown away. Is what I feel right now.
That's what got him broke in the first place.
Tell them dudes stop biting you. I'm sad to tell the industry and my diehard fans around the world that the injury has sidelined me 3 years ago has come back to bite me in a big way. After seeing,
I came looking for man's butt.
After seeing and talking to my doctor on Friday, I was informed once again that I must go under the knife to repair bad tissue damage as soon as possible. Today, my heart is a lot happier after seeing that what Sandra McCartney and OCM has done for me by starting this fundraiser. I'm speechless. I'd like to thank Sandra, OCM, and the fans and companies that made me who I am today, and my mama for blessing me with what I have. The owner of the agency tells reps, Prince stated, When Prince contacted me with the devastating news, I was at a loss for words. Tears were rolling down my cheeks. I knew I needed to help him emotionally and financially, so I started this fundraiser to help ease the pressure of the huge expenses that were on the way. Healthcare is affordable, and Prince doesn't and Prince doesn't have a plan due to his pre-existing condition, so he'll have to pay for the entire surgery out of pocket. Lately, the industry seems to have been taking a hit after hit, but we all need to stick together and unite as one so we can get through whatever life throws at us.
Yep, and how much money have they raised?
$43.
$43. You heard it here first, people.
Notice
$43. Right.
No, I really don't think they may have raised $43.
Yeah, probably $32.
Probably $69.
It would be fitting, wouldn't it? Right.
It would be, but he's a nasty effer.
That's what he is.
I know I broke that bait.
Doing the pogo stick.
Yeah, he was
pogoing around.
He was going through the back chute, and he said, "Excuse me, sir, you seem to not have looked." I don't care.
He hit a dry barge.
He hit, hey, Kenneth, you next time.
I came looking for man's butt.
And yours isn't loose yet. Why is that?
Why do you keep giving me these rookies?
Quit clenching.
Why do you keep giving me these first timers?
These dudes.
Quit being nervous.
Move your hand.
I swear to God, you clinch up one more time.
I usually like that, but you're a beginner.
I kiss you, you orange flavor mother.
Now move your hand. Cut. I don't want to do it. He's
not into it.
Yeah, have a rub on my chest a little bit. This is really bad.
It's going.
I don't like it.
Not good.
You heard Pinky got the hips, man.
No.
Pinky. Got hips, man.
I thought they test for all that. He slid in there, huh?
Such a waste. Such a waste of talent.
Well, remember when they asked her, have you ever got a venereal disease? She said, hey, that's part of the business.
There you go.
That runs the risk of the business.
Hey, you're getting a little personal.
Do you ask a motorcycle rider, has he ever had a windburn? Just saying. Comes with the territory.
All I'm saying is, hey, you can't make an omelet.
There you go. Right.
He left it alone. Hey, you can't make an omelet.
818-514-1202.
Miss Pinky turning into Brownie? Because that's going to be a bad
look.
Yeah,
that's going to be a bad look. Say, what a waste, huh?
That's a waste, man. Shout out to her, though. She was a very talented, I guess you can call her actress.
Yeah, whatever.
Oh, I miss her.
Whatever.
I'm going to miss
Doing
her.
Doing that stunt screwing.
She's going that easy route.
Yeah.
I'm going to miss her, though. I'm going to miss her. I never got with her, but I'm just saying I'm going to miss her.
Don't worry. She'll be around.
She'd be opening floor doors in a minute.
Yep. First time out, you are on floor door detail.
Oh, Pope Pinky.
All right. Well, while we take a few minutes to mourn the Pinkster, we'll take a break. So we'll be back after this, Truth Brothers Radio.
Brothers Radio.
Master Martin King, Lutheran dreams. What? Young Denzel, the way I move through scenes. What? I'm like a preacher that once was a fiend. A story of change that came with wings. What? Pretty as the skyline, the sky is my ally. What? Son of the most, so from up my eyesight.
What's good? This is one half of the award-winning Truth Brothers Radio, Devon, telling y'all to tune in every Monday, 7 p.m. Central Standard Time, to Truth Brothers Radio for the latest in news, current events, politics, controversial topics, and our infamous Tell the Truth. To keep up with the latest of what the Truth Brothers have going on, friend or follow us on any of the major social media networks, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Instagram, or catch any of our past shows anytime at blogtalkradio.com/truebrothers. Thank you for all the love and support. Catch y'all next Monday. Two fingers.
Truth Brothers Radio.
I don't even know what that means.
No one knows what it means, but it's provocative.
No, it's not. It's
getting the people going.
True Brothers Radio, we back.
Yeah, man.
Man, shout out to the people we missed, man. Out of here. That man, that was, I miss hearing that.
Yeah. Pinky gonna be out of here.
That's wrong.
Just saying.
Second hour, we'll be bringing up is business and very personal. We'll be getting to the IRP6. You guys want to hang around and listen to that. Very, very, very real story. I read.
Very real.
Yeah,
yep.
You want to hear that? But I'm sorry. Go ahead. More terrible truth.
I got you. Yeah. So check this out. Since you going on broken stuff, here we go. Man proud to win Brooklyn's smallest penis contest.
There you go. It's a baby. It's a baby. I just want to thank.
Right.
God.
And my mother.
For shorting me up.
A delivery store worker says he's proud to be the owner of Brooklyn's smallest penis.
There you go.
Nick Gorhan, 27, fought off competition from 5 other entries in the event at Kings County Bar in the borough of New York City. The event, which also featured a 55-year-old calling himself Rip Van Dinkle.
There you go.
was watched by over 100 people.
Talking about he got the smallest. I got the smallest penis.
He got a lot of damn nerve. Nobody feels me.
I tried to do an ant and he walked off.
Damn. Promoted as the pageant for confident people with a sense of humor, the contest featured skimpy mankinis and a Q&A round. The winner, Gorhan, told...
Can you pee over your balls? Nope, he's the winner. That's the question of the Q. All right, first question.
Dumbass.
Can you pee over your balls? No, sir.
We got one, y'all. Yeah, the man said, the size of a man's penis does not matter for who he is as a person or in a relationship.
Spoken like a man with a small penis. Spoken. Look here, man. Just because you pack it don't make you better than me. That's what they say. You ever notice that people who don't have money, be like, man, money ain't everything till you don't have it.
Till you don't have it, right. Right.
They say money can't buy everything, but broke can't buy you a damn thing. That's just my life. I'm sorry.
Right. Right. No, he say the same thing goes with breast size.
Of course.
Probably the most fun I have with my penis is that I'm a grower, not a shower.
There you go.
And when I'm with a woman, I love seeing the reactions on their faces. It grows double in size. They seem amazed by it. So 1 inch, you double that.
Get you two inches of pain, lady.
Come here, girl. Let me show you something.
Uh-huh. You're going to love it.
Don't run. Don't run.
And wipe that smile off your face. Don't you laugh at it.
This isn't funny. I'm here to bring it. Oh, my God. That's just terrible.
I hate him, though. Okay. You know what?
Boo! Boo on you, sir!
See, considering life, I'm blessed that I don't have to deal with certain situations in my life. Let's just go there. Now, to move forward, Why would you enter that contest? I'm just curious.
Because there's a contest for everybody. And he said, this one is right for me.
And I'm saying,
damn it if I don't win this.
You're talking about breast size. Now, here's the thing about breast size. Some men like big breasts. Some men don't. I don't know one woman that says, I love a small penis.
818-514-1202. All right, ladies.
Do you like them blurred lines?
Oh, I hate that song.
Why you hate blurred
lines? I'm so tired of freaking blurred lines. It has just,
really?
All summer,
yeah.
It's enough. Y'all done sat there. Y'all done made that man so much money.
What's wrong with that man making money? His daddy made money.
Yeah, I'm done, man. I'm done. I don't like the song.
You don't like
don't
blurred
like
lines.
It at 818-514-1202. Come on, ladies. Well, come on, ladies. I want to hear about the great Robin Thicke. I want to hear about it. Bring it to us.
Dude wasn't thick. But
right. But no, I'm sick of that song, man.
No,
and y'all have sat there and anointed him King Negro.
No, I don't.
They've sat there and crowned him for the summer. You are king of the Negro.
I don't think that's the case.
Really,
I think that people
really
like the song. It's very catchy.
So was he looking at his black wife when he said, "I'm gonna domesticate you"?
Nah, so what did he tell him? What is?
I am. Right. Really? That's what gets you. Really?
Because yeah,
let you go up in the club and, ooh, girl, you the hottest in this place. That's what happened.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I'm saying.
Gunshot.
They get away with I don't like the song, man. I'm not feeling the song. Don't like the song. Then to turn around and say, no, Marvin Gaye family,
well,
you don't get paid.
That was for real. Pharrell
not
was,
you guys.
Pharrell was bogus for that.
Right, but he said, Robin Thicke said, and just to prove to y'all, I'm going to sue y'all.
Yeah.
Those are my tracks.
Well, you know what?
And of course, yes, the song is catchy.
Yes.
I know.
Yes.
The song is catchy.
Yes, it is.
When Marvin created it, he created it to be catchy.
But Marvin didn't,
Marvin didn't create that song.
Marvin didn't tell them that they got blurred lines. First off, Marvin was just like, you know, everybody, whatever, you know the song. I can't
mm-hmm.
sing, but you know.
Mm-hmm.
And dance all night.
Got to give it up.
Yeah, there you
but
go.
But he said, no, we're going to blur these lines up. It's my song. Yeah, whatever. I don't like the song, man. Not a big fan. Not a big fan of his.
Oh. You know what? I honestly like Robin Thicke. I feel like he's I don't like him as in, like, everybody is praising him. I think he's just a cool, you know, cool dude. I don't have any
Elvis.
Yeah, no, not like Elvis, not at all. We don't condone Elvis' life. Elvis stole your music and made it
like Robin.
No, Robin didn't steal your music.
He went right in the catalog. Oh, Marvin? No, this is Robin. And no, I ain't paying you. Pay for the sample, man. That's all I'm saying. Pay for the sample.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I don't get that. I don't think that you should be bullying Robin for, you know, making a catchy song, for making the summer hit. Like, he made the summer hit. I mean,
he made the set. Yeah, whatever. Yeah, moving right along. Go ahead.
Yeah, whatever. All right. Well, look, speaking of this, man, this was sent by a listener, and they wanted our take on it. No joke. It said they wanted to know if this was true or not. And it was the top 10 ways to keep him from cheating. Don't know how that works in your world, but they wanted to get our personal opinion.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay, let's hear.
All right. Well, I'm not going to read the most men do not cheat because they don't love you anymore. Men cheat because they want more variety in their sex life. Some complain about being bored. They want to feel adored by their partners. They want access for freedom. Now, blah, 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 blah. Anyway, start at number 10. They say find his relationship pattern. Don't know what that is. What's a relationship pattern?
Do you like to go bowling and never go? I don't know.
They say I don't know how to combat the biological argument. Some men simply believe that it's hard to wire into their gene to have sexual relations with as many women as they can. If this is your man, it probably won't matter what you do. Try to recognize the man. That was a dumb thing, whatever. Next, learn his love language. These are dumb. These are really...
Which, pick out some of the highlights, because that's, whatever. The hell is a love language?
Yeah, prioritize your relationship. Be aware of your emotions. Let him have time to himself. Okay, yeah, I get that. I don't think that'll keep him from cheating, but whatever. Make sure he knows how much you appreciate him. Don't become too controlling. Don't over-accommodate. Over-accommodate. I'll get to that. Be open to experimentation. And the number one reason is be willing to initiate sex. Do all of those things really keep you from cheating?
Guess it could. I don't know. I guess it depends on what your reasons are. I mean, there are some people who are just serial cheaters.
Okay.
What?
No, I'm looking at something. We'll get
to that. No, there's some people who are just serial cheaters, but I don't think most men are that way. And I think, if a man or woman cheats, it's usually brought about by something that's going wrong in a relationship.
Well, see, and that's one of my things. Like, they said that the men don't, at the beginning of the topic, it said men don't treat because they don't love you anymore. They just want a variety. And is that the only, my question to you, because I have to ask from the person who sent this point of view, is that really the only reason that guys step outside the box?
Well, there's no one reason.
Right.
But, I mean, it depends on that. Right. It depends on that one person. It depends on the individual that you're dealing with.
Exactly. And
you know, hey, guys, ladies out there, let's be real. You can do things to cause yourself to get cheated on. Guys can neglect their women. Guys can rough handle, hit their women. Guys can
pay car notes.
Whatever. I'm just saying, guys can do things to cause a woman to step out on them.
True.
And women, you can do things that, a guy would step out on you about.
The question that was proposed that came along with this is, if you do all of this, why do dudes still go out? And that's because the list came down, and then a comment came behind it that said, I do all of these things, and my man still, I know he's cheating, which I don't get how, because you either on his Facebook or you caught him in the act or whatever. I do all these things, and he still goes out and cheat on me anyway.
Really?
What's the reason?
Okay, well, then if whoever that is knows that he's doing that and you still with him and you're not saying nothing, you're an enabler. So you're enabling him to do it. So you're saying it's okay to do.
But she's also asking why, which I don't, like I said, I don't.
Because you're letting him.
If
you said you do all of these things and he's doing that,
it's because you allow it to happen.
You allowing it to happen.
If a dude know he can get away with
because
something,
that means he don't appreciate you. If you're doing all of these things, and we're gonna just go for the sake of argument and say that you're walking perfect in this relationship, because women love to believe that they walk perfect in a relationship. They do no wrong. So we're gonna assume you're doing that.
Okay.
So that means he obviously don't appreciate the gift that he has, and that's why then.
Or he just, like we were saying earlier, I think the dudes, I tell a lot of females who ask my opinion on this, once a dude knows that he has you and there's no threat anymore because there's no threat of him, you getting away or something like that, or you're going to, they almost feel like they can do whatever because there's no threat. You called me cheating. You took me back? Oh, cool. So it's like there's no threat of you ever leaving him. So he like, why would I stop if you're not gonna punish me?
I mean, that's
if he don't care. That's
keeps right. If he's a serial cheater, fine. But what if, again, what if what you're doing is called you're too clean? You might think you're giving him personal space, but maybe you're not. What if you're constantly going through his phone and he's not going through your phone? What if he's going through your phone and you're not going through his phone? What if every time he's around somebody, a coworker or whatever, you freak out or you call scenes? I don't know.
With that being a question, well, we got to take a real big quick break.
Let's get a break in, and then we'll ponder this and then get back on it.
It's been a long time.
Truth Brothers Radio.
follow procedures. The crowd couldn't wait to see this. Nobody's been this long awaited since Jesus. Who wouldn't believe this? I heard the word on the street is I'm still one of the deepest on the mic since Adidas. They said I changed the times from the rhymes that I thought of. So I made some order, put the new world in order. With mathematics, put your status above the average. And help you rappers make paragraphs for graphics. With some days of dawning, new ways of performing.
Truth Brothers Radio.
Do you have feelings of inadequacy? Do you suffer from shyness? Do you sometimes wish you were more assertive? If you answered yes to any of these questions, ask your doctor or pharmacist about tequila. Tequila is the safe, natural way to feel better and more confident about yourself and your actions. Tequila can help ease you out of your shyness and let you tell the world that you're ready and willing to do just about anything. You'll notice the benefits of tequila almost immediately, and with a regimen of regular doses, you can overcome any obstacles that prevent you from living the life you want to live. Shyness and awkwardness will be a thing of the past, and you'll discover many talents you never knew you had. Stop hiding and start living with tequila. Tequila may not be right for everyone. Women who are pregnant or nursing should not use tequila. However, women who wouldn't mind nursing or becoming pregnant are encouraged to try it. Side effects may include dizziness, nausea, vomiting, incarceration, erotic lustfulness, loss of motor control, loss of clothing, loss of money, loss of virginity, delusions of grandeur, table dancing, headache, dehydration, dry mouth, and a desire to sing karaoke and play all night rounds of strip poker, truth or dare, and naked twister. Warning, the consumption of alcohol may make you think you're whispering when you're not. It's a major factor in dancing like a retard. May cause you to tell your friends over and over again that you're in love with them. Also may cause you to think you can sing. Alcohol may lead you to believe ex-lovers are really dying for you to telephone them at 4 in the morning. Alcohol may make you think you can logically converse with members of the opposite sex without spitting. It may create the illusion that you are tougher, smarter, faster, and better looking than most people. And it may lead you to think people are laughing with you. Alcohol may cause pregnancy. And it also may be a major factor in getting your ass kicked. So what are you waiting for? Stop hiding and start living with tequila.
Tequila!
Truth Brothers Radio. Truth Brothers Radio, we're back, and we're into the terrible truth. Make sure you're with us on the second hour when we'll be getting into the RP6, and that story is really going to just flat out blow you away.
On the second hour.
In the second hour, right. Now, you going back into, I guess we're talking about relationships right now, 818-514-1202.
Right.
Now, do you feel like you could, have you ever been cheated on?
Not that I know of.
Okay. Well, there you go.
Not that I know of. I've never. If I have, I've never found out about it. Which means they're really, really good at holding it, or I've been a good dude and nobody.
Well, you've just been incredibly oblivious.
No.
Oh, okay. I got you.
Because I'm real particular on. I haven't been in many relationships. I've never been in many serious relationships. So in order for me to, like, be cheated on, I feel like you have to be in a serious relationship to be cheated on. You have to be in a relationship where, you know, hey, I want to be with you, you want to be with me, and then that. Because if you're dating, you're not cheating on anybody. You're just out here in the world oblivious, like you said, to whoever, whatever could be doing. Like, if I'm dating a female and she sees me walking down the street with another female, she can't get upset. Hey, we're not together.
I got you.
Dating. So I mean, have you yeah. So.
Yeah, sure. I've cheated on people. I've been cheated on. It's life.
Did you take it?
Huh?
Did you take it under the chin?
Took my L like a man. Take your L. How you take your L? Sometimes you do it. Especially when I was younger. I mean, you ain't oblivious in some relationships, so you're not as attentive, or you don't even care anymore.
But
you don't end it.
Real quick before we get there. When you're younger, do you consider yourself actually being in relationships like that?
Well, sure you do.
I don't know, because when I was younger, I didn't really think it like, I go with this girl, that type of thing. Like, that's...
Well, I wasn't talking about eighth grade. What about when you're 21, 22?
Oh, you know what? Younger.
Yeah, I wasn't going to.
I got you, you know. Next story.
Yeah, here you go. Police hunt Hulk woman in over UK attack. The police are hunting a woman who was dressed as the Incredible Hulk when she allegedly attacked another woman outside a fast food restaurant in England.
I'm just ready. Go ahead, man. Yeah, I had this look of, oh, my God, over face. No, I just read the end of something. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. I got you. The suspect, who had green skin, red hair, and a white T-shirt, like the comic book character, launched an unprovoked attack in the York, North Yorkshire area, police said. The 17-year-old victim suffered a black eye and a bruising to her face.
17?
The victim was 17.
Oh, okay.
The Hulk hit.
I saw Hulk girl.
Yeah, Hulk attacked a 17-year-old victim, a girl.
And they don't say why. They just.
All we know is Hulk.
Gamma ray.
There you go. Gamma. Hulk smash.
Okay, I got you. Go ahead.
All right. Police Constable Cheryl Hunter said that the neighborhood team urges witnesses to get in touch with her. This appears to have been a holy assault. Thankfully, the injuries were not too severe. However, the outcome would have been far more serious. The incident occurred just after 3 p.m. on April 26th outside a McDonald's restaurant in the city's Blake Street area. The woman dressed as the Incredible Hulk jumped into the back of a car and drove away with other people. So Hulk just attacked. Don't know what to say. Why would you dress as the? Why would a woman dress as the Incredible Hulk?
She-Hulk. Why not?
I guess so.
Yeah, that's normal. That's not nothing bad. I mean, that's, you know, that could be kind of, you know, turn on. But anyway,
the Hulk, She-Hulk.
She-Hulk. Yeah,
okay.
Dude.
I got you.
Okay, come on now.
I got
serious.
You.
Okay, I mean, not be serious, but that was Marvel-less. Anyway,
wow.
But,
yeah, go ahead. Moving right along.
Right. Check this out. Red Lobster customer writes, none, nigga, as Tim.
What?
What a dumbass.
I gotta read it as it's on the paper. And again, second hour, we'll be talking about the RIRPDF 6. Definitely a good story. You guys want to get it. But for right now, we're doing the terrible truth. Red Lobster customer writes, none, nigga, as tip for server, she gets suspended for posting it on Facebook. She gets suspended. The girl
who got the tip.
Yes. No, well, you know.
Right.
There's a famous rumor that black people don't tip. Woo, this gets racist. Okay, let's go.
Don't like that.
All right. Again, people, we get these stories, and, you know, we normally don't read them until we get on the air. And, yeah, there's a famous rumor that black people don't tip. But in Nashville, Tennessee, a server at a Red Lobster received a reverse of that when customers left behind the words, none, nigga, in a section of a section anointed just for the tip. That's bogus. I'm trying not to laugh.
Oh, Lord. This racism is killing me inside.
I'm trying not to laugh because I've seen somebody just, oh, I got a tip for you. Hold on. Anyway, around the middle of her shift, as reported by Mail Online, Tony Christina Jerkins, 19, who is trained to be a nurse, served two customers who acquired the bill totaling $45. Sadly, when Jerkins retrieved the check, she saw the racial remarks. On her Facebook page, Jenkins wrote, this is what I got as a tip last night. So happy I live in the proud southern states. God bless America, land of the free, home of the low-class races of Tennessee. I like that.
I like that, too.
I like that.
I like that, too.
Jerkins told Mail Online she would never hold a grudge or attempt to alter a receipt for not receiving a tip. I don't get tips all the time. I really don't care because God is my provider. I don't worry about tips, she said. Jenkins claimed that in her short time serving the couple on Saturday afternoon, that they seemed particularly strange. They were extremely rude, but I introduced myself to them and they didn't respond. When I came to take their order, they simply told me they wanted their food and to put everything into the go box. I offered to serve, but they told me abruptly that they just wanted to check. When I went back to the table, they had gone and left the receipt and written the comments in there. The couple that allegedly wrote the racist word was speculated to be in their 20s. Jenkins said she was surprised by the intense reaction of her post of the receipt online. It was very surprising to me when I posted it. I thought it may get a few likes from friends and family, people praying for me, that kind of thing. I didn't think it would escalate this quickly. I'm just a 19-year-old nursing student, she said.
I don't understand. Why would they get mad at her for posting the tip? They the ones who wrote that in there.
But you know,
obviously,
what?
they didn't want her serving them.
I'm gonna get to that real quick. Though the manager at the branch of the Red Lobster in Franklin told Jenkins she had done nothing wrong when she initially showed him the unsettling receipt. No one gave the approval for her to post the receipt online. The teenager has been suspended on full pay pending the company's decision on what to do next.
Wow. Now, also, my man Joe Neckbone just entered the chat room. What's happening, Joe?
What's going on, man? My initial thing is, remember, this takes me back to Rhonda's story. When Rhonda made a comment on something and something happened to her. Though,
because she reacted to it.
Right. And I don't know what company's policies about what you do online is. I don't know if you can post anything like that. But if she did, what if she covered the name of the restaurant up at the top of the bill?
Whatever. I mean, whatever. To me, the restaurant should be behind her, because these crass customers, obviously, she didn't give them bad service. She did her best to accommodate them, but they didn't want to be served by her.
Oh, yeah.
And then they wrote that. Put them on blast. Put it on Facebook. She didn't say nothing ignorant behind it.
Right.
She said, hey, bam, this is what's going on.
In America.
But, you know, we're going to have a show coming up real soon about blackness.
Man.
Because it's starting to go around that you should have to apologize for being proud of who you are. I don't see anything she did that would jeopardize her job besides showing the ignorance of the patrons that she had.
And the thing about that is, she didn't even, in the comment that she made, I didn't see her even saying anything about her blackness at all. She was just saying, hey, it's racist people out here.
Right. But as she said that, she was saying that because of what they wrote.
Right.
So you knew who she was.
Right.
So by calling them out, that's being proud. But they want you to apologize. Again, same thing like you were saying with Rhonda. Mm-hmm. Rhonda defended her blackness. I have the right to have short hair. I can have short hair and be beautiful as well. And mainstream said, no, I don't think so.
Yeah.
I think we're going to go there. We're going to have a...
It's more than time for that to happen, though. I feel like, you know, with everything going on, even through politics, it's that time. It's just that time for us to go there. And, again, let us not forget that during our second hour, we have,
I'm just saying that's not right. I don't see she didn't do anything to jeopardize her job. Anyone disagree with me? 818-514-1202. Again, if you wrote, you could have just not tipped her. You could have paid your bill and stuff.
But you
wrote that to be crass. So she put you on blast. So I don't understand why she got such a negative response about it.
Every action has an equal and opposite reaction. Therefore, if she initiated, it's cause and effect. She initiated something, the girl put it up on Facebook, and how does she get discipline, quote unquote, discipline,
right,
for what happened, for what somebody else did?
If she got on there and wrote something crass back and put it on Facebook and said something equally ignorant, I can understand that. But she took the high road. She just put it out there and said, look, these are the type of people that we're dealing with down here in Tennessee.
And then threw some Jesus in there on top of it. So that just makes it that much better. Seriously. But whatever. It's racism. I think, you know what bothers me about this situation is,
mm-hmm,
I think low-key, a lot of people try to hide the fact that racism is still alive. They don't want to really acknowledge the fact that it's still there.
Right. And if you bring it up, they're quick to tell you because you have a black president now that we're living in a post-racial world. No, we're not.
But again, that's the agenda. I mean, the fact that they put non-nigga on the tip, that says it in itself. Like, you know, racism is here. It's going to be here for a while. Enjoy it. Take it as under the chin. You know, and even to me, it's that was racist. Even to go back to the Trayvon verdict, to me that was based on racism. The girl, what's her name? They just got through and they Marissa.
Right.
That was based on racism. So
right.
I mean,
how dare you not accept our plea bargain? We're gonna max you out. How dare you try to be?
Yeah. The guy.
No doubt.
Another guy. The guy who gets out of jail. He was went to jail when he was 14. Did 20 years. Then the judge say, all right, out of his 20, he went to jail at 14, got 27 years, he did 20. Judge say, all right, you know what, throw another 40 on him.
But what did he do to get the other 40? It had to be something. You can't throw another sentence on top of a sentence. That's double
jeopardy. No. Supposedly, he had got into a small altercation in the prison system. Like he was on his way out, and the inmates knew he was on parole, and they were trying to get, you know.
They were trying to get him caught up.
Exactly. And he got into a physical altercation where he defended himself, but they looked at it like, oh, no, he's a killer, because he wound up killing one of the dudes that he was fighting against. It was four dudes attacking him. He wound up killing one of the dudes, and boom, there you go. And he gets 40 years tackling that for. On 40 years on top of that.
Mm. Well.
Shakur Systems.
That's crazy. I don't get that. Okay, but whatever. Well, I digress. I got a feeling about. We need to do a show on that.
System is that. I mean, we're even going to get into that in the next hour, so that's why I figured that.
I
figured, like, these are the things that we need to really pay attention to, though. Like, I mean, a lot of times we're blinded. We got blurred lines over our eyes that we can't see what's really going on. So, yeah.
There you go. Yeah. If you're not careful, the system will run you into the dirt, especially if you proud. If you proud, if you ain't got no problem being who you are in this society, and the mainstream doesn't like it, they'll run you into the dirt.
That's quick, because that's because anybody who seems rebellious or wants to say buck the system, anytime you do that, you're labeled as a threat. And anytime you're labeled as a threat, they're going to try to silence you anyway. And by there, I mean the powers that be. That's just my opinion.
I got you. Yeah, but, I mean, if you look at what we're going to be talking about in the second hour, these six gentlemen didn't buck the system. They didn't rebel. Matter of fact, they created something that would help the system, that would make the system work better. Mm-hmm. And because bigger entities didn't like what they did, or the fact that what they made actually worked and they couldn't make it work, they figured they was going to rip them off. And they couldn't use just regular industrial espionage.
No.
They gonna go and trump up some charges that we'll believe because only black people would do this. So I don't think that's cool.
Racism.
There you go.
It's alive. It's the Frankenstein monster. Literally, it is. And you know, to get back into our terrible truth or whatever, man. Because I got a feeling this subject is going to. Because when I read it the first time, it kind of like made me a little. I don't want to say pissed me off because I'm trying to be politically correct. Can we say pissed?
Well, you already did.
Okay. Well, when I first read the story, it actually did piss me off because I was sitting back and I'm like, okay, what did they do? And I'm looking for that hook, like, oh, I can see why they did this, or I can see where they put this into a flag. But I'm like, literally, what did they do? They
said
they came out with something that would help people. We'll just say people.
That's what it's supposed to do.
But
that's what it was supposed to do.
It was something that was said to me a long time ago, and I don't know if it's correct to say, but it says only the white man can profit from pain, or profit from suffering, or profit from
anything. That's Chris Rock, right?
Sure did.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering, like, was that, if that's true or not, was this something, does this tie into what Chris Rock actually said?
No, because this wasn't profiting from pain. What they had came up with is a computer program that would help other agencies, say a local police department, be able to work with the FBI and work on the same computer, work on the same program without miscommunication.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you remember September 11th, part of the problem was interagencies were not communicating with one another. They couldn't communicate. One was using one type of program, the other one was using something else, and they wasn't communicating interoffice memos or warnings back and forth, and that's how September 11th jumped off. When you found out about the bombing in Boston, you found out that you had one agency, the CIA, getting warnings from Russia, but somehow it wasn't getting transmitted over to the FBI.
Somehow.
Because inter-office communication was not in sync. They created something that would make it in sync, that would make it work. And there's been other agencies, FBI was working on it, couldn't get it to work. IBM was working on it, couldn't get it to work. These people, these six men created something, got it to work, and was like, here, yeah, boom, this will work. And Ray was like, okay, how did they do that? We're going to have to get that. No, this is protected, and we got this to work. So they said, okay, well, we can't have it. We're going to take it.
Yeah, big business.
Big business.
That's big business.
Big business.
That's big bully business. But, and I'm not trying to make light of that. I'm just
right.
Saying,
no, you're right.
Yeah, that's big bully business. But wow.
So, on that note, when we come back, we are going to get into it. Our guests will be in the studio when we come back. Truth Brothers Radio.
Truth Brothers Radio.
I'll be going on vacation. See, the thing is, if you about to be up out this bitch, check it. Peep Delta. We be flying all over this bitch. Let me ask you something. You fin to raise up and get your travel on? From the interior to the exterior, you've got to get your posterior in one of these big-ass planes. Dog, you lay in the cut straight sitting on your ass and getting your drink on and your snack on while we floss and fly this mofo all over this bitch. East Coast, West Coast, it don't matter. Nia, we'll get you to your hoe and back lickety-split. No shit. Then you be back at your crib chilling with a flat spliff thinking we were some crazy-ass angel. Hell, these fat, round, thick-ass vessels run up in the sky so deep, it be crying. Yeah, you thought it was rain. So bring a towel, because at Delta, it's laid out like that. Call one of these fly-ass Delta coochies and make all them punk-ass co-workers of yours catch the vapors as you be off and up out. You going? We fly you there. You been? We done already flew up in there. We got you covered like a Jimmy hat. At Delta, we loves us some flying, and it be showing like a motherfucker.
Oh, Lord! This racism is killing me inside.
You want answers? I think I'm entitled. You want answers?
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
Are you not entertained?
Truth Brothers, Truth Brothers Radio. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the second hour of Truth Brothers. I'm Ray.
And I'm Devon.
And we are the Truth Brothers. The number to give us a call is 818-514-1202. 818-514-1202.
And as always, you guys know you can hit us up at our email at wewanttruth@att.net. And truth is spelled TRUF.
All right, and the chat room is up and running, and it's getting full up in there. And what's up to everybody in the chat room? Feel free to join in and throw in your comments. All right, check it out. Let's say you created something, and it was something that the big boys at IBM, a whole lot of people in the tech industry couldn't get to work. They've been trying and trying and trying, and they spent millions and millions of dollars to get this thing to work, and they can't get it to work. Here you come, average Joe, Joe Little Guy.
Right.
You get it to work. It works beautiful. Great. Everybody is saluting you. Everybody is giving you hats off, and everybody wants your product. But the big guys say, hey, how'd you do that? You say, uh-uh, trade secret. This is what we do.
Patent pending.
Right. And big guys say, well, you know, we going to have to get this from you because it's called industrial espionage. It happens every day. If people remember, people who are old enough can remember, back in the mid-'80s, remember the Soft Sheen Company?
Mm-hmm.
Made Jerry Curls and Soft Sheen products and Afro Sheen and all of that. For years, they had the whole industry of black hair care on lock.
Right.
Revlon say, you know what? There's some money to be made in that nappy hair.
Wow.
Well, they did. And they did what you call industrial espionage. They had some people undercover join the company, break into the place late at night, and steal the secrets behind the Jerry Curl and whatnot and all that, curl activator and whatnot. And Johnson Products was crying foul, and everybody said, hey, man, that's how business is done in America.
Okay.
Well, fast forward to the day, they didn't want to just try to do industrial espionage. They said, you know what we're going to do? We're going to hook these guys up and frame them for mail fraud, have them locked away, and then we'll get what we want to get. Well, that's what we're dealing with today. It's going to be a devastating story, and we're going to be getting into it with a Just Cause, an organization that was established in 2005 by a group of concerned citizens who witnessed what should have been a federal civil case turned into a federal criminal case that was grossly overcriminalized. After observing how a civil rights case can be misconducted as a criminal case, people's lives was instantly turned upside down. A Just Cause was formed to help fight against abuse and misuse of power occurring today with our United States justice system.
The mission of the AJC, the mission of the AJC, yeah.
Sam Thurmond,
he's the president of the AJC. I mean, Sam has previous business, technology, and military experience and has volunteered with AJC since its inception in 2005. Sam is a graduate of University of Georgia with a BA in journalism and mass communications. Wow.
There you go. And that's who our guest is on Truth Brothers Radio today. So everybody, give it up for Mr. Sam Thurmond.
All right.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having us on.
Oh, thank you. How you doing today, sir?
Doing well. Thank you.
Great. Why don't you give us some backstory about this case and how you're involved with it?
Okay. And joining me tonight also are Cliff Stewart and Ethel Lopez. Cliff Stewart is one of the brothers of one of the IRP6, and then Ethel Lopez is one of the vice presidents in a Just Cause. And, you know, I appreciate you giving a highlight at the top of the show. And a Just Cause is involved in this with the IRP6. A lot of folks may or may not have heard about the IRP6, but the IRP6 are IT professionals who started an IT company. It was an IT startup. These gentlemen are currently incarcerated in federal prison, and as you indicated, got railroaded, but they're currently in federal prison in Colorado. The IRP 6 are Gary Walker. He's the CEO of IRP Solutions. David Banks, COO. Clinton Stewart was the vice president. David Zappolo was the vice president. Kendrick Barnes was the CIO. And Demetrius Harper was the CEO of DKH Enterprises, which was a partner company of IRP Solutions Corporation. And I say IRP Solutions Corporation, that's where the IRP in IRP 6 comes from. IRP Solutions was started in 2003, and they were developing, the company was developing software called Case Investigative Lifecycle. We refer to it as CILC, and the short name for it is SILC. SILC was a software solution that would actually help law enforcement. So as your listeners are listening, you know, this is going to be very interesting that IRP Solutions was doing business with and for law enforcement, yet that's the very people that stabbed them in the back and railroaded them. IRP's prospects included the Department of Homeland Security, the Department of Justice, New York Police Department, and other major law enforcement agencies. Now, when IRP was developing this software, Gary Walker had actually already started developing the software on a smaller scale. But after the tragedy of 9/11, Gary saw that there was a need at law enforcement or within law enforcement at all levels for this type of software. Now, the 9/11 Commission was formed after 9/11, of course, and the 9/11 Commission basically said that one of the problems that existed was the fact that law enforcement agencies could not share information, they couldn't collaborate on information, and so forth. The software that Gary developed, the SILC software, would actually do that. Now, Cliff and I, you know, we're going to say some things, and folks are going to say, man, they sound like they, you know, were right in the thick of things. You know, how can they speak with such authority with regard to how the company was doing and so forth? We can say that because of the fact that Cliff and I actually worked for IRP Solutions as well. And so, you know, at a certain point in the late summer, early fall of 2004, or 2003, I should say, IRP was actually contacted by the Department of Homeland Security. Department of Homeland Security said, hey, we hear that you guys are working on a software that we need to see. You know, they had a mandate that they needed to get some things done, and they heard about the software that was being developed by IRP Solutions. We took a trip to Washington, D.C., met with the Department of Homeland Security. In this meeting were representatives of the FBI, Secret Service, Federal Air Marshals, TSA, I mean, and the list goes on. It was like a who's who in law enforcement.
Right.
Let me put it this way. Gary and David hit it out of the park as far as the demo was concerned, as far as the software demo.
Right.
The Department of Homeland Security was so impressed that they basically, you know, there was a series of other demos after that, but basically they were interested in what they saw, and they asked for certain modifications. Gary and IRP Solutions had a very efficient way as far as the way they conducted business.
Right.
Went about modifying the software, but in order to accommodate all of the requests that were being made by the government, they engaged the services of staffing companies, not just your regular temporary agencies, but staffing companies that specialized in IT professionals, folks who had the expertise to develop software, write software code, if you will, and to do testing. Well, the Department of Homeland Security and federal government got, you know, they weren't, you know, the federal government doesn't move quickly, yet they were saying, you know, that, hey, we're putting you in the budget. We're looking at you guys for a $12 million pilot project. You know, give us a quote on one of the modules. As a matter of fact, Gary had provided the Department of Homeland Security with a quote for one of the modules for the software out of an 18-module software suite. One of the modules was worth $100 million. So when the federal government didn't close this business as quickly as possible, IRP got behind on paying, well, basically incurred debt is what we're looking at. The company incurred debt. What startup company doesn't incur some debt? And that's when a couple of folks started throwing these allegations around of wrongdoing and started making accusations that IRP was involved in some sort of scam and so forth. But we think it runs deeper than that because as we discuss it a little bit further, you'll see how this thing just kind of grows into something more than just a debt collection case. So in a nutshell, that's kind of the history of IRP Solutions Corporation.
Let me ask you a question real quick. I want to rewind it back a little bit, because I want to know a little bit more about the software. It seems like common sense to maybe somebody from the outside looking in to think that all of these agencies would be able to communicate with one another. How come it's so hard for these agencies to be able to communicate and work with one another?
Well, you know, one of the things that we found as we were doing our due diligence back at that time is the fact that law enforcement agencies and at the federal, state, and local level, they are really protective of their domain, so to speak. It's like, this is mine. I'm not sharing it with anybody. I don't know where that mentality comes from, but that's the state of mind that we found, and actually that's called out in several audits by the GAO and the Government Office of Audits. And there were audits that were done as to what led to 9/11 and all the things that were called out as far as how to rectify this. And so you got the Trilogy Project, the Virtual Case File, the Sentinel Project, all of these things, and they found that agencies just did not talk. And so, as a matter of fact, even with 9/11, folks found out after the fact that several agencies had bits and pieces of information about terrorists, but because they did not compile that information into one central database, that's how some of them slipped through the cracks. It wasn't that the information wasn't available, but it was that everybody didn't have that information or was not in the know. So like I said, you know, it's some sort of state of mind as far as, you know, this is my domain, I'm not sharing the information, which is sort of a sick approach, but that's kind of the way things have been done.
Right, and also that's that same mentality seemed to happen with the Boston bombing. Some of the reports came out that same, we're not sharing information with one another, still happens.
And you know, don't get it mistaken. It has not really improved. When I mentioned the virtual case file, when I mentioned the Sentinel Project, these are what we, you know, refer to as failed initiatives, which have failed miserably. And Cliff can share a little bit more on that, where, you know, the government has wasted over $1 billion on solutions that are supposed to be able to do this kind of thing, yet they have not been able to, you know, the major defense contractors haven't been able to come up with a solution. Yet you have here a small startup company, and Gary Walker being a genius, basically, he figured it out. As a matter of fact, on some of the demos, the question would come up very often, you know, are you guys former law enforcement? How do you know how to put all this together? It was Gary's approach, and Gary was brilliant as far as doing that. And then David Banks, he understood how to, you know, sit down and talk to people and get an understanding for how they do business, and then be able to translate that into a software application that made sense. It wasn't something that was just going to sit on the shelf and no one used. This was something that was very impressive, and I say was, it is impressive, because the software still exists. It's under lock and key. No one has it. You know, the government, the raiders, so to speak, thought they were going to get it, but they didn't get it. And we'll talk a little bit about the raid as well.
Right.
Let me ask you a question real fast. How you doing? I had a question. You said during the demo, they asked, why did they ask if there was a reason?
I'm sorry, I didn't get that question.
You said that during the demo that they were reenacting modifications to the device, right?
Right.
Why did they ask for those modifications?
Well, one of the things is that, you know, when you're going into a demo and you don't really have all the facts, and so, you know, when you're doing a software development effort, you have to, you know, you have what you call discovery phases, and actually I'm still in IT, Cliff is still in IT, and we work on software development projects all the time. And so you go through a phase of requirements gathering, you sit down with what you call your business owners, so to speak, and ask them a lot of questions to figure out what do they need. Well, in the initial demos that were done for the Department of Homeland Security and all the folks who were there, basically, you know, IRP Solutions went in blind. It was based on the software that Gary already had, based on the information that Gary and the rest of the IRP team had already collected with regard to how law enforcement works. So when the Department of Homeland Security saw it, then they saw, I'll say they saw the potential, basically, in the sense that, wow, this will definitely work for us, but can you put a, they actually used the term, can you put a federal face on it? And then they wanted it to be expanded to cover certain scenarios that they would encounter. So from an Immigration and Customs Enforcement perspective, you know, during this time, and you'll find this in several reports from that time as well, they were lacking in how they tracked even illegal smuggling across the borders and immigration controls and that type of thing. So as a matter of fact, the Department of Homeland Security provided scenarios and documentation to IRP Solutions that spelled out these types of scenarios, and they gave it to IRP Solutions under the caveat that we want you to take this, modify the software to accommodate these types of scenarios. Oh, and by the way, this information is for IRP Solutions eyes only. So, you know, that was, you got the feeling at that point that, hey, the Department of Homeland Security, the federal government, they are talking serious business here when they're giving us information and saying, this is for your eyes only, not to be released outside of IRP Solutions, and we want you to modify your software to accommodate these types of situations.
Right. And Two Brothers Radio, the number to give us a call is 818-514-1202. We got a caller right now with a question. Joe Neckbone, brother, go on with the Two Brothers. What's your question?
Hey, how you doing, man? I heard your story from a variety of sources, and I totally feel you guys, man, totally. But I got a question. When I was in government contracting back in the 80s and 90s, what would happen is we would usually get approached by one of the big guys wanting to be a sub to us. In other words, you know, the goldfish sitting on top of the whale. Did that ever happen with you guys?
Oh, it most certainly did, and that's an excellent question. In September of 2004, And since you were in government contracting, you'll understand this terminology when I talk about industry day. The federal government, the FBI, actually had an industry day, and it was for their federal investigative case management system. So for the listeners who want to look that one up, it's FICSM. And so it was the federal investigative case management system. That management system basically was to do and convey to the major defense contractors, here's what we're looking for. This was a joint effort between the Department of Homeland Security, FBI, and some of the other agencies. At this particular presentation, now this was after IRP Solutions had been engaged in conversations with the government for a year already. And at this presentation, when the government did their presentation and up on the screen, their PowerPoint, it basically was the IRP Solutions software. The government was telling all the other major defense contractors, here's what we're looking for. Gary and David, and I believe Clinton Stewart was in that particular presentation, they're looking at this screen and seeing everything that they had shared with the Department of Homeland Security is up on this screen. And not, it didn't stop there. The government actually, from an integration perspective, and when I say integration, it's talking just like what the caller said, they would get calls from some of the major guys and say, hey, we want to partner with you. Well, the Department of Homeland Security, they basically said, hey, if you want to get a piece of this pie, there is a company that already has what we just showed. It's IRP Solutions. And if you want to get on board, you better get involved with them and get engaged with them. The phone did start ringing. I mean, there were calls from IBM, Hewlett-Packard, SAIC, Deloitte, and anyone that knows, you know, the big top, you know, the top Fortune 50 type companies, that's who we're talking about, was calling IRP Solutions. And the problem came in, though, with the fact that, you know, some of these companies are notorious for stealing company software. And we were actually told by the department, certain folks in the Department of Homeland Security, namely one of the guys, one of the project managers by the name of Bill Witherspoon, he actually said, you better watch, you know, this guy, you know, from Bearing Point. You better watch this guy from IBM because they will steal your stuff. Now, they're telling them to talk to IRP, but then at the same time, they're telling IRP, watch them because they'll steal your stuff. And it came true from the standpoint that when you got down to talking teaming agreements and got down to talking about, you know, what kind of business relationship we're going to have, they wanted to take all of the teeth out of the teaming agreements, which was just setting the stage to steal the software. You know, David and Gary had all the teeth in there to be sure that, no, we're protected, but these larger companies wanted to take the teeth out. So, yes, that did definitely happen.
So when you had, so when the big boys came a-calling and wanted to get a piece of the pie, what was you guys' working relationship like with some of these bigger companies?
Well, there was no business relationship at that point. They didn't have a solution. And you know, sometimes we talk about it in terms of when they go in and do a presentation, they show smoke and mirrors, so to speak. They will give you conceptualized approaches, schematics, architectural designs as far as the way a software should work or the way they envision it to work. Well, you know, they missed the mark because of the fact that IRP Solutions had a working solution, had a working software. So when a demo was done or when a demo was conducted for an audience, they saw actual, you know, you plug in information here, click here, it goes here, and so forth. There was a, you know, it was set up for demo purposes, of course, and so there was dummy information in the database, but there was still a database with information that showed how it all tied together, and then it showed how that information could be shared across platforms, across agencies, and would be viable to the government.
Now, when you had software, one of the people who was trying to do the same thing was the FBI, correct?
Correct.
And they didn't do so hot. How was it like working with them, and how did they take you being able to do something that they couldn't?
I guess let me correct that. IRP didn't work for the FBI or with the FBI per se, but, you know, it was, and that's where part of the web comes into play as far as, you know, when you look at failed initiatives that they tried to do something. FBI Director Mueller found himself before Congress, as a matter of fact, speaking to the fact that, you know, you've spent at that point at one of the meetings, at one of the hearings, at that point it was about $500 million for something that didn't work. And then the FBI found himself before Congress again, basically asking for more money, but they had already spent $1 billion. Now, where there was an FBI connection or federal agency connection was the fact that IRP Solutions actually had retired federal agents working as subject matter experts with the company to help to, you know, refine it and to give it, you know, that extra little oomph, if you will, from a federal investigations perspective. So that's why it is so asinine that when the FBI executed their raid against IRP Solutions, you know, under the auspice that it was a front organization, that the company was not legit, that it was purportedly, they used the language in the search warrant, the company was purportedly developing software. Well, FBI agent John Smith, he knew that IRP was legit. He knew that the software was legit, but he got a judge to sign off on this warrant knowing that the company was legit. And as a matter of fact, the FBI or the federal agents who were working at IRP Solutions were working for free. And when queried about it, when they were asked about it as to, you know, is IRP for real? Is this software for real? One of the agents, Gary Hilberry, submitted a signed sworn affidavit saying that IRP is legit, the software is legit. Me and two other guys are working here. We want to continue working here because they're going to sell this software, and it is a solution that works. Well, you know, John Smith executed a raid anyway with 21 federal armed agents against a company at the time that only had like 15 to 18 employees. So that's a greater than 1-to-1 ratio agent to employee. You know, there's something wrong with that picture.
Yes, it is. Now, my question, okay, decided to want to reach guys up on charges, and they basically
said that we've got this contract, they're ready to hand it to you, but they're slowly starving you guys out because you don't have any revenue coming in because of the contract. So then they say, well, you guys are here with something that doesn't work. And the whole time when they did the raid, they didn't take the financial records, did they? What did they come for?
No, and this is Cliff Stewart. You know, I was there the day of the raid, and it's so when you look at it, I mean, it's ridiculous, but being there, actually experiencing it, it's like, come on, this is only stuff that you see in a movie. I mean, because they came in, like Sam said, you know, 21 armed agents. They slam in handcuffs down on the desk, you know, in front of the secretary and stuff, in front of the administrative assistants. And these are ladies. You know, they're threatening, you know, you want to go to jail and this and this and that. And it's like, you know, they come in there with this show of force, and as a just cause, you know, when we did research, you know, after the fact, we found that, you know, this type of raids that they reserve for drug dealers, you know, big kingpins, gun runners, people like that. You know, you come in, you show this force just basically to try to, you know, to try to shut them down with all this intimidation and fear. And it's like, why are you doing this at a company that's only got 18 employees here? And you know, so they do that, then they come in and they take all the black employees, they corralled us in the break room and basically then put a armed agent at each door. Like, even if you want to go to the bathroom, you have to be escorted. And, you know, is this type of thing that you say, what is wrong with what's going on here and why are y'all doing this? Then, you know, the executives take the filing cabinet. They say, we're here for financials. They take the filing cabinet. It's marked financial records. Put that in the middle of the floor. They go in this cabinet, take whatever you want, make a copy. That's what you're here for. Do what you got to do, and then move along so we can get on with business. They leave that sitting there and take more than 10 hours copying every computer in the whole building. I mean, from the janitor up to the CEO, they copied everybody's computer, everything on it. Went into the server room. Got the server that had, you know, the development server, the server where all of the software developers keep their work. They copied that. They took the test server. They copied everything off the test server. Everything.
Wow.
And it's like, okay, if y'all are looking for financial records and email communications and stuff like that, you could have got that from the staffing companies that was doing business with IRP. They had copies of those records. I mean, contracts were signed between IRP and these staffing companies. Emails were exchanged, so they could have got that on the other side. Anything they said they're looking for, if they're looking for timesheets, they could have got that on the other side. The timesheets were sent to the staffing companies, but they come in, and it's like, when you look at it, it's always like, y'all trying to steal the software. Why do you need software development documents from the engineers? I mean, they're notebooks, stuff that they was taking notes in and saying, this is how we're going to develop this, and this is how we're going to develop that. They confiscate all that. But you saying you're here for financial records, there ain't nothing financial about software code. If you're not a developer, you don't even know how to read it. And so they come in and take that and yet say, we came here for the financial records. But then we went and talked to the FBI head counsel up in Denver, Colorado, and he said, well, if they took anything that was outside that search warrant, the whole search warrant is illegal. You know, they should not have taken one thing that search warrant did not call out. And so you have all this on the table, but when these type of things are brought to the judge that was over the case, Judge Christine Arguello, it's like she just takes it and ignores it, like, well, yeah, whatever. And so you're looking at it, you're like, okay, so where is the conspiracy here? Who really is committing the crime? And you look at it and you realize, like, okay, our federal government is nothing more than a crook. And they just make up stuff on people all the time. That's just the way it goes.
And a real quick question, because I go back to what you said about that raid, which is funny to me because you talk about these, like, 30 people when the raid on Enron happened, they only two people in there to do the stuff that raid.
No
that
doubt.
Funny to
exactly.
Me. And, it, well, I had a question, but...
No, go ahead, because I was just going to mention, when they came for Bernie Madoff, they didn't come with that many people. And when they...
That's
covered,
right.
He didn't even have handcuffs on.
Exactly. That was my other point. And another thing is, when I looked up this story, again, I had a couple of slight local recognition, newspaper things like that. Was it covered by TV media at all?
No. See, that's what, you know, we tell people, like, you know, the TV media didn't pick it up. And what the media try to say when you call up here to Colorado and say, oh, well, we didn't have, you know, that much, you know, enough manpower to deal with this, or, you know, our people, they didn't have that much bandwidth or whatever. You got to understand where we at, man. This Colorado Springs, I grew up there in Dena. This is Colorado Springs. Let me tell you about what they put on the news. One day, a sea weasel,
wow,
breaks out of the zoo and escapes. That was headline news for 2 weeks. But wow, they cannot cover when a small black business gets raided by the FBI with 21 armed agents. You got FBI trucks. I mean, this looks like something in the movie. You got FBI trucks outside. You got they coming in back and forth. They taking out dollies with, you know, crates full of stuff. They went to the local, like, Best Buy, bought extra hard drives so they could copy everything. Now, you tell me the FBI is walking around doing all this stuff in the parking lot, and the local media just never shows up. But y'all can try to hunt down an otter that you ain't never found for 2 weeks because he broke out of the zoo. But they don't have an excuse of why they couldn't cover this story.
Dig that. 818-514-1202 is the number. Call in. Ask these guys a question, man. This is really real. This is really real that's going on. I want to ask you one more question. What is it like to be a black IT company in Colorado and in industry, period?
That's a funny question and interesting, because you look at it and you have like Sam said, you know, Gary's a genius. David's a tenacious businessman. The group of men they had around them were IT professionals that had been in the industry for like 20 years. And then the Starjo owned IT company saying, hey, you know, we're gonna do something for our country. We're going to do something so that we have positive role models to say, hey, this is a black-owned business that can be a role model to say, hey, you know, you don't have to go do the street game. You don't have to go do a street hustle. You ain't got to commit crime. Look at these young black intelligent IT professionals. Let's be role models for the other young brothers that's coming up. That, you know, they don't have nobody to look up to as far as positive. And so then to become an IT company and to say, hey, all this stuff is doing good, and you know, Department of Homeland Security, they're courting us. And we talking to NYPD and, you know, all these huge agencies. And when it all comes through, yeah, we're going to be able to say we did it as a small business. It shows if you work hard, if you fight, if you're tenacious, you can get it done. And, yeah, were we naive a little bit? Well, a lot. We didn't realize, you know, everything that was going to come against us. But we, you know, at that point, we were believing in the American dream. Like, hey, it's the American dream. Anybody can do it. You put your mind to it. You work hard. And, you know, good things will come to you. So to be a small IT business, a black business in Colorado Springs, we felt like at that point, hey, you know, we got a fair chance because we got a great product and everything is fair. But, again, we were naive. We were very naive.
We got to take a real quick break. We'll be back with these brothers, man. Truth Brothers Radio.
Truth Brothers Radio. Rap is the passion of Christ, nigga cross me. Took it out of space, and niggas thought they lost me. I'm back like a Cairo back, with B-boy survival back. It ain't nice, folks, yo, we can't go back. The game need a makeover. My man retired.
What's good? This is one half of the award-winning Truth Brothers Radio, Devon. Telling y'all to tune in every Monday, 7 p.m. Central Standard Time, to Truth Brothers Radio for the latest in news, current events, politics, controversial topics, and our infamous Terrible Truth. To keep up with the latest of what the Truth Brothers have going on, friend or follow us on any of the major social media networks, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Instagram, or catch any of our past shows anytime at blogtalkradio.com/truthbrothers. Thank you for all the love and support. Catch y'all next Monday. Two fingers. Truth Brothers Radio.
Brothers, Truth Brothers Radio. We're back, and we are talking with Sam Thurman, Cliff Stewart, and Ethel Lopez, members of a group called A Just Cause, fighting to free the RIP6, a group of businessmen who created a revolutionary software, and instead of helping to change the way our government interacts with one another, they were railroaded and put in jail. So let's get to the they came in, they raided the place, and you guys are in, these guys are in court now. Was there a whole bunch of irregularities with this case? Because with the search warrant being wrong, it seemed like a lot of this stuff should have just got thrown out immediately.
That's true. You would have thought that with everything that was on the table starting from the search warrant, that as a judge starts seeing these inconsistencies, that it would have got thrown out. But we had a corporate defense lawyer, you know, look at everything that happened in this case, look at the transcript and the amount of motions that was put in by the defense, the motions that were put in by the prosecutor, and he came to the conclusion that, you know, the judge was biased toward the, you know, toward the defense. The defense put in 48 motions on saying, throw this out, throw that out, you know, this don't apply, this should be covered under something else, this and that. Out of those 48, somewhere between 2 and 4 were granted. Out of 48 motions for the defense, these people were saying, I want to present all my evidence to ensure that it's known that I'm innocent. And the judge is not allowing this. Every motion that the prosecutor put in, oh, she granted that. And you look at it and you go further into the case, and even as, you know, during the trial, all the things that transpired there, I mean, wouldn't allow expert witnesses, forcing a defendant to take the stand, you know, violating Fifth Amendment rights, Sixth Amendment rights, violating the Speedy Trial Act, not allowing evidence when the jury asked for more evidence, would not allow it to go in. And you look at it and you say, what's going on here, man? You know, they're trying to get these guys on conspiracy, but this conspiracy is going on in the courtroom by the judge and the prosecutor. And we'll get into some more details, you know, about all that. But I wanted to, you know, give Sam a chance to give y'all kind of a background, you know, to basically personalize the guys and give you the background about them.
Well, and you know, one of the things, before we do that, and Cliff, I wanted to kind of piggyback on something else that you were saying as far as the motions and so forth, and what you guys were saying as far as, you know, some of the irregularities in this case. Well, you know, one of the things, just right out the bat, you know, they were given court-appointed attorneys. And those court-appointed attorneys did not do the due diligence necessary in a case like this. There were thousands of pages of evidence, thousands of pages of discovery that the defense, court-appointed defense attorneys did not go through. They had no interest at all in putting together a defense strategy. Their interest was in negotiating a plea agreement. And, you know, this other attorney that Cliff was speaking of, he made a solid discovery in stating that usually in a case like this, and what happened is that the guys ended up firing their court-appointed attorneys because it was one of those things where, hey, these guys are just trying to throw us in jail too. So they fired them, represented themselves pro se, and everyone who was in the courtroom, other attorneys that were in the courtroom, said that they did a stellar job in representing themselves. Now, that's one of the other problems in the sense that Judge Christine Arguello, she was so vindictive against these guys that she didn't cut any slack. But, you know, other attorneys that we've talked to, and this one corporate attorney just recently said that, you know, usually when someone goes pro se, the judge gives them a little bit of a benefit of the doubt. But this judge held the IRP 6 to a higher standard than which would have been expected of a licensed legal professional. And so, you know, that is an atrocity in and of itself. Now, people will ask, well, why did they have to go pro se? Well, they had to go pro se because of the fact that they were blackballed. Now, again, as Cliff indicated, you know, we're talking all IT professionals. These guys, in and of themselves, stand alone, were, you know, top-notch consultants in the marketplace. Well, when after the raid, the FBI, Assistant U.S. Attorney Matthew Kirsch, went about ensuring that the guys did not close business, first of all, because there were other opportunities for IRP to close business. First of all, made sure that they couldn't close business, went everywhere that the company went and basically spread lies and saying that, you know, that this company is getting ready to be indicted, or this company is fraudulent, this company is a scam. So then the guys had to go out back into the marketplace to get jobs and consultant gigs, and then they went about blackballing them there. Gary Walker, he was a director, an IT director at Kaiser Permanente. They went to his job and ensured that he lost his job. A couple of the other guys worked for aerospace companies, went to their jobs, ensured that they lost their jobs. There's Comcast, which is in Denver. They went to Comcast and prevented these guys from being able to get hired. There were opportunities there that they could have gotten hired, prevented them from getting hired. So, you know, you couldn't generate the kind of income that you would normally generate and then be able to pay for an attorney. So basically they put them in a situation of being at the mercy of the court, so to speak. But they represented themselves and represented themselves in stellar fashion. Now, as far as the guys are concerned, you know, they were very, very patriotic guys. You know, I like to share the story sometimes that, and we talked about 9/11. Gary Walker had a presidential appointment to the Air Force Academy. He didn't complete Air Force Academy because of the fact that he wanted to fly. Well, his eyesight prevented that, so he went on and pursued his career and got his degree from the University of Colorado in information technology. But one thing that's critical about this is that, you know, 9/11 was the most tragic situation that happened on the U.S. soil. We were on a sales trip to NYPD, and we stayed in a hotel across the street from Ground Zero. I don't know if you guys have ever seen that. Now, you know, they have the memorial there. But years ago, it was just a hole in the ground. And Gary was so committed to developing this software to ensure that another 9/11 did not happen. We were standing on about the 60th floor of this hotel and looking out at this hole in the ground. And Gary said, you know, that's why we're doing what we're doing. That's why I'm working so hard on this software to prevent that kind of thing from happening again. The very company that Gary basically sacrificed his life for came back and stabbed him in the back. Gary sacrificed his life with his wife, his son. I mean, it's like his wife refers to his computer as his mistress. It's like, I guess you're going upstairs with your mistress now. You know, that's how much time he devoted to it. David Banks, he graduated top of his class in air traffic control in the Navy. Clinton Stewart, he was also a military veteran in the Air Force. He had top secret clearances handling communication software and that type of stuff. David Zappolo, Kendrick Barnes, Demetrius Harper, they were all seasoned IT professionals. And so, you know, and family men. These are men of integrity, Christian men who, you know, had solid business backgrounds, and then you have the government come back and stab them in the back. And, you know, the impact that this thing has on their families, their children, you know, we got to share a little bit about that. I mean, because Ethel, you know, Ethel Lopez, she's a vice president with the Just Cause, and, you know, she is very instrumental in reaching out all across the country to people to help this story continue to stay alive, to keep the traction. But one thing that really, you know, Ethel shares the story of how this thing impacts families. So if we can allow her to jump in there for a moment, I appreciate it.
Yeah, well, I want to ask you a question real quick. I know you guys are working on a piece. How come the transcript of what went on with this court case with so many irregularities, how come that hasn't caused cases thrown out or to put them on a fast track retrial?
It should be. Yeah, and the circumstances behind that will be more than just a retrial. It's grounds for dismissal. Cliff touched on the different things as far as some of the anomalies in this case, and the transcript is directly tied to the Fifth Amendment violation that occurred during this trial. The prosecution, before trial, they have all these meetings and negotiations and stuff, and they kind of set the schedule. So they meet with the judge and identify, hey, this part of this case is going to take this long, this part is going to take this long. Well, the prosecution had basically said, my part of the case is going to take about 3 weeks. Well, at about a week and a half, he rested his case. So then that put the IRP6 in a situation where their witnesses were not ready to come to trial for at least another week. Well, their witnesses were coming in from Washington, D.C., from New York, from places outside of the state of Colorado. You can't, at a drop of a hat, tell someone we expect you to come on this particular date, have airline tickets arranged, and have hotel accommodations arranged, and expect them to drop everything and show up the very next day. Well, the judge, Judge Christina Guell, gets angry about this situation because the defense witnesses are not there, but instead of holding the prosecution accountable for cutting his case short, she rebukes the IRP6 at a sidebar and basically say that you better have someone on this stand this afternoon, and if you don't, one of you better take the stand or I'm going to rest your case for you. How can a judge threaten you, and that's what it amounts to, threaten you that I'm going to close your case? In essence, you're not even going to have an opportunity to put on your case because you ain't got no witnesses here. So, you know, if you don't have someone, I'm closing your case. Well, that's called compelling a witness to take the stand. You can't compel a witness to testify against himself. And so when Kendrick Barnes was the witness with the IRP 6 defendant who took the stand, when he took the stand, he asserted his Fifth Amendment right. And then after that, they had a recess. The IRP 6 requested that part of the transcript because everyone realized what had just happened. Well, that part of the transcript is missing. And that's because the judge realized what had happened, and she's, doing everything possible. The court reporter is doing everything possible to keep that transcript concealed. And, Cliff, if you can help me out on a little bit of that as far as some of the other things that transpired as far as trying to secure that transcript and some of the things that we have done from a Just Cause perspective to get it.
Right, but wait a minute. If the transcript from that part is missing, isn't that a reason to throw the case out and to revoke the verdict because there's a whole missing piece of the record for public viewing? How can anyone figure out what happened when there's a big giant hole in the transcript?
See, that's exactly what we're talking about. Because everybody you talk to understands that, exactly what you said, that point you just made. Everybody realizes that. Everybody say, man, there ain't no way you can have a missing transcript and they can lock you up. There's no way you can have a missing transcript and they don't throw your case out. There's no way that you don't get a retrial. There's no way that the judge is not going to push to ensure you have that transcript. We thought the same thing. We're finding out that, the question you got to ask is, who makes that court reporter turn over that transcript? The judge that presided over the case is the one that has a responsibility to tell that court reporter everything you recorded in that case, you give it up. If you didn't record something, I'm holding your feet to the fire, and you about to face charges for not recording everything and for not delivering it to the court. I mean, the law says that court reporter within, I believe, it's 14 days, has to deliver everything that she took down to the court, the clerk of the court. She has to deliver it. all of her notes, all her, you know, shorthand, everything, and that she has to record everything that happens in the case. But when she doesn't, like this court reporter, Darlene Martinez, she did not do that. The judge that was over the case is the one that's supposed to say, give up everything that you got. Well, this judge, if she does that, it exposes what she did, the crime she committed, the violations that she committed, the, you know, against these men's constitutional rights. So when we went to the judge and said, hey, tell her to give up the transcript, well, okay, give them the transcript. Then suddenly, oh, Darlene Martinez, this court reporter, well, it's not available. What you mean it's not available? It has to be. It's for public viewing. Well, it's been destroyed. She gives this excuse, that excuse. It's up to my discretion. Then when you start quoting the law to her saying the Court Reporters Act states that you have to turn over everything within 14 days and then that everything that you turn over has to be available for the public viewing for no less than 10 years. How you going to tell me it's not there? That's when she starts. Like, okay, they know about the law. Let me try to twist up the situation. So then we go to the judge. The judge says, well, maybe she didn't have her headphones on at the time that this transpired.
Yeah, but even
when asked about that, Darlene Martinez said, I don't wear headphones during you know, court sessions. So you have all this stuff that happened. We said to the Office of Professional Responsibility, somebody tell this court reporter to give up them transcripts. That's not our jurisdiction. We went here, 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 everywhere. That's not in our jurisdiction. Went to the U.S. Attorney's Office in Denver, Colorado, said you need to talk to her and get her to do it. Otherwise, you need to basically get her for committing a crime for not providing these transcripts when the court reporters actually say she did. They say that's not under our jurisdiction. We can't deal with that. Why don't you guys, you know, they're trying to blow us off. Why don't you guys go ahead and sue her? So we as a Just Cause did sue her because we paid almost $10,000 to get that transcript so it would be enhanced so we can say, okay, what all happened during this, and we need to make sure that these men have this for when they fight their appeal. Well, they say it's not under their jurisdiction, the U.S. Attorney's Office. So then when we sue Darlene Martinez, then suddenly, you know, and you sue her as a independent contractor because she is an independent contractor. Say, I'm taking my notes that I took, I'm going to transcribe them and give them to you and, you know, everyday English language. Well, she didn't deliver all of them. That piece is missing. So then when we sue her, you know, under a civil case, suddenly who comes to her rescue? The U.S. Attorney's Office said, we're going to bring her back under the federal umbrella and we're going to represent her in this case. Now, you telling me that's not a cover-up, that they not trying to fix something, they not trying to make sure that something don't come out, they not trying to cover for this judge, Christine Arguello, and all the things that she did illegally during this case? You can't even get my transcript, but I've been locked up for over a year in federal prison? Now, you know something's wrong with that. But we got Attorney Mark Gross out of L.A. He's now dealing with that civil lawsuit. He and Cornell Johnson up in Denver, Colorado, they've teamed up and they're handling that civil lawsuit against that court reporter and saying to the U.S. Attorney's Office, what's going on? Why all of a sudden now you got jurisdiction?
Okay, and what I don't understand is, have you guys appealed this case?
Yeah, this case is under appeal right now. They got that Fifth Amendment right for you know, the violation of Fifth Amendment right, forcing the defendant to get on the stand. They have a violation of Sixth Amendment right where, you know, they basically did not allow expert witnesses to take the stand for the defense, and that's another piece of the story that needs to be voiced. They also have Speedy Trial Act. The judge violated the Speedy Trial Act by almost, like, 6 months or something like that. And then also the judge did not allow a bunch of evidence that the defense tried to bring in. She would not allow it. And it's like, instead of me being innocent until the prosecutor proves that I'm guilty, I got to prove my innocence, and you won't allow me to bring the evidence in that proves it. She kept a bunch of it out, even to the point when the jury, when they asked for evidence during deliberation, is there more evidence? Can we see something else? No, there ain't nothing else. Y'all got what y'all need. It's like, how do you do that and then say that these men got a fair trial? It's a bunch of crap, man.
Right. Now, here's my question. One, wasn't some of these other agencies and other police departments, like I heard these guys was dealing with the Philadelphia Police Department, and they was really, really anxious for the software. Couldn't someone, a representative from Philadelphia, come up and say, hey, I've seen the software, I know it works, I saw the thing in action, and it's beautiful. And my second question is, where are the other judges in Colorado on this? But you can't tell me all the judges felt like she did what she was supposed to do.
Well, I'll answer the second question and leave the first one for Sam. But I'm going to tell you, they are all saying, I ain't dealing with it. That's what the judges are doing. You had the chief judge up there. He recused himself. You got all of them. We go to all of them. Hey, y'all deal with this judge. Tell her, come handle her business. Force this court reporter to deliver this transcript. Oh, we can't mess with that. That's an open case. This ain't no open case. The case is finished. It's under appeal. These men need their transcript to be able to fight a proper appeal, you know what I'm saying? And none of them will deal with it. None of them will come after this judge and mess with it. It's like, oh, well, you know, we ain't saying nothing about it. And that right there is what's crazy. And see, that's what we need your listeners to understand, because just like you said, everybody has this, you know, an assumption that, no, the justice system, you know, when it comes down to it, you got to give me my transcript. The judge won't, can't, I mean, she can't, and we hear a lot of people say, well, that's against the law. Yeah, really, no doubt it's against the law, but who holds the judge accountable? They don't get prosecuted. They're immune from prosecution. The judge and the prosecutor, and that right there is crazy. You can't mess with them, but we gonna mess with them.
And you asked a question about the city of Philadelphia and other agencies like that. You know, that's an excellent point. But as Cliff indicated, you know, there were certain motions that were filed at the beginning of the trial that whereby the prosecution made certain that certain information that would ensure that the jury understood that IRP Solutions was a legitimate business and that they were developing viable software, they made sure that the jury did not hear that. They actually basically had a ruling in the court that there was a line drawn in the sand that said that you can't bring up anything about this company past this particular point. So stuff related to Philadelphia, they couldn't even talk about it, but it would prove that this is a real software. Now, to give you some background on that, David Banks, like Cliff said, tenacious businessman, he was finding opportunities out there all over the place. The city of Philadelphia, the Office of the Inspector General, had a need. Motorola and IBM were already on contract for the city of Philadelphia. They couldn't fulfill that need. They had already been on contract, had spent, I think, like $7 million on something that IBM and Motorola couldn't deliver. David found out about this opportunity. David and Gary went and met with Philadelphia, met with the deputy mayor for public safety, and got the wheels moving, and Philadelphia was ready to sign on the line. Until they, one of the representatives actually from IBM was fed some bogus information, some lies by Assistant U.S. Attorney Matthew Kirsch. He goes in and plants down an article that basically says the IRP is under investigation for something, you know, whatever. And then Assistant U.S. Attorney Matthew Kirsch calls down to the city of Philadelphia and says that an indictment is coming. The guys hadn't even been indicted yet. It was only an investigation. The city of Philadelphia officials actually even said, you know, we could care less about the company being under investigation. What defense contractor or what IT business that, you know, does big business is not under some kind of investigation at one time or another. So that didn't faze the city of Philadelphia. What got them was when Kirsch said that an indictment is coming. How can you predict that an indictment is coming? Well, I can tell you how you can predict it. There were two grand juries in this situation. One grand jury, and so, you know, you talk about all the other stuff, this one's gonna kill you. You have two grand juries. They had one grand jury. They called all kinds of witnesses, and that grand jury saw the situation for what it was. They saw it as a debt collection case. Here's an IT business. It's a startup company. They have debt, and if someone has not been paid, then they need to handle that through the civil court system and sue them. That's one. That's the bottom line. That grand jury said, "Hey, this, you know, why are we even listening to this?" Certain grand jurors even said, "You know, so you're saying that if I don't pay my bills, if I get behind on my bills, federal government is going to come after me and prosecute me under federal charges. They didn't come back with an indictment.
Right.
Assistant U.S. Attorney Matthew Kirsch convened a second grand jury. He only called FBI agent Robert Moen. He was one of the FBI agents that was involved in the raid. He just stated lie after lie after lie. Lies that you can't even imagine, and twisted the story in such a way that when you only have the prosecutor and one FBI agent going before a grand jury, of course you can get an indictment. That's when the guys got indicted. So to ask, why, other agencies didn't come forth, Judge Arguello wouldn't allow other agencies to come forward. They even did an analysis, a forensics analysis of the software. A guy by the name of Don Bilfer and a company called CalForensics did an analysis of the software and the company, and he basically gave the software glowing returns. He said, this software is valuable, this software is viable, and it is something that will be beneficial to all law enforcement across the country. That finding was not allowed to be presented in court. They did everything possible to discredit the company, to try and show that it was not a legitimate business and that it was not developing software. It's the craziest thing you ever seen.
So they used the first grand jury to figure out how they could do it, so when they used the second grand jury, they could get what they wanted.
Right, right.
Well, first of all, how can you pull that? You have two grand juries. If the system, people say, well, the system failed them. If the system was allowed to work the way it is designed to work, the system would not have failed. You're going to have rogue agents. You're going to have rogue prosecutors. You got rogue people out there. And, don't get me wrong. We're not throwing the baby out with the bathwater. Everybody that's in the system is not wrong and corrupt. But the system is designed to where you can catch those kind of situations. But then when the system is not allowed to work the way it is and you just allow the rogue folks to continue with their rampage, then this is the result that you get.
Right. Now, there's something that's just been gnawing at me this whole hour. So I just want to ask, this judge, who is she affiliated with? She's got to be affiliated with someone. She's got to be in someone's pocket.
Well, if you look at what happened with this situation, you got the people who brought this. One of the staffing companies, there was a lady named Susan Holland. She's one of the executives at ETI Professionals that IRP was doing business with during this. Susan Holland has some kind of connection with Holland and Hart Law Firm up in Denver, Colorado. Well, there's a man up there named Greg Goldberg. He's one of the partners at Holland and Hart. Greg Goldberg compiles this package and hand delivers it to Assistant U.S. Attorney Matthew Kirsch, because Greg Goldberg used to be an assistant U.S. attorney up in Denver, Colorado. Well, Matthew Kirsch takes this package, he gives it to John Smith, the special agent in charge of the case from the FBI, and tells him basically, go get something on these guys. That's how he came up with this, this lying search warrant saying, they don't have no software, they're a front company, this, this, and that, and came in trying to steal the software instead of getting the financial records. But what's really bad is you look at it and we find out that the judge Christine Arguello, used to be a partner at Holland and Hart Law Firm. And so you got the judge, she's connected with the people who are bringing this up. This little web of disgust, these friends calling in favors with friends, and one of the friends is the judge that's presiding over the case. No wonder she made sure that the prosecution got what it wanted, that she didn't let in evidence, that she's trying to force the men to testify and wouldn't let expert witnesses testify. She's part of the firm that brought it up, what I'm saying? And then when that was brought to her attention, hey, judge, you used to be a partner at this firm, you need to step off. She makes a statement, no, I only knew this Greg Goldberg in passing. Well, Greg Goldberg and Judge Christine Arguello were both up for the judgeship at the same time. In the Denver Post newspaper, Greg Goldberg says about Judge Christine Arguello, I know her very well. And the judge says, oh, no, I just knew him in passing, and would not recuse herself. And the law says if there is an implication of a conflict of interest that a judge should step off. This is not an implication. She used to work with this dude. She used to work at the law firm that brought the issues up,
And this guy used to be an assistant U.S. attorney up there in Denver. And then, furthermore, it's against the law for a public, for a private practicing lawyer to interfere with a federal case. And you got him hand-delivering stuff to the prosecutor. You got FBI agent John Smith. He's delivering stuff back and forth between him and Goldberg. It's all this stuff. But when you got the judge, who is the one making the decisions about the case and who would be the person that should bring light to all these things, when she's corrupt, then you got the whole situation is corrupt.
Wow. Incredible story.
That was real.
Incredible story, and we're going to have to leave it there. Everybody get at us. If you want to hear more on this story and do a part two, get at us. Great story. I want to thank Sam Thurman and Cliff Stewart for being on the show and telling this story. And get with us, and we'll put information up on our Facebook page on how you can support these gentlemen and help free the RP6. Yeah.
I actually have a link for all the websites you guys have put in on Facebook page, because I was actually sat back for a long time and I posted about it. So you gave me a lot of information because I wanted to help out in Orleans, but or give some advice. So yeah, we should be good.
Exactly. And we're going to wrap it up at this point. And thanks for everybody for tuning in, checking out this story. Get with us next week. And we're going to let you know that if you're not down with the Truth Brothers, peace, y'all.